And traffic, so he's here shortly. We'd like to get started. We have a quorum here, Scott. Yeah, we have it. Don't worry. There's Scott. You want to try calling the roll here?
Morning, Commissioner. Chair Bill Dodd, not present. Vice Chair Tom Bates.
Here.
Commissioner Campos. Commissioner Cortese. Commissioner Glover. Commissioner Kinsey. Commissioner Sartipi. Thank you. Commissioner Wiener?
Present.
Thank you. Present. Commissioner Adrian Tissier?
Here.
Commissioner Amy Reinworth?
Here.
Present. Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We have a consent calendar. We have a motion on the consent calendar.
Commissioner Bates?
Yes, sorry.
Commissioner Bates.
Oh, we have an announcement you
we
want
have
to make?
An announcement.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, excuse
Go ahead.
Me. I'm sorry. In accordance with state law, I am making the following announcement. Each member of the board here today will be entitled to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum of $500 per month per agency. This amount is provided as a result of convening a meeting for which each member is entitled to collect such amount. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The consent calendar is before us. Do we have a motion? Moved by Worth. How about Tissier? Oh, Scott. Wiener, seconded by Wiener. Is there an objection to us all being voted aye? Okay. Seeing none, we'll pass unanimously. The next item is a financing plan update. Brian's going to present that.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, commissioners. Brian Mayhew. I work in finance. We're here to talk, for a few minutes about where we are with the authorities we had on the financing plan and some of the market opportunities we see in the direction we're taking the portfolio this year. Hopefully this is all going to be relatively quick, relatively painless, and there will be the usual test afterwards. With me is Mary Collins, who has been our lawyer, bond counsel for Morrow Carrington since I got here, and partner at PFM, Bob Rich, who has almost been with us the entire time. Okay, let's go. Basically, we're going to talk about, relatively quickly, three different things that have been on the agenda, that have been in the press, and have been on our minds, and we have had to watch for over the last year. Number one is what is happening to banks and their credit ratings. We have credit support on $1.5 billion worth of bonds. So you always have to be watching is what's going to happen with that. And there are renewals and other things that go on. So those become things that we keep our eyes on constantly. Second is that the market, for various reasons, has gotten into territories that haven't been achieved very much before. And that means interest rates are at extremely low and attractive rates. The idea is to look at what in the portfolio can be managed, what can be refinanced, and where we can take our opportunities there. And then finally, there is about $1.2 billion to $1.5 billion left to go in the three. We have about $3 billion worth of projects to get done. We need about $1.5 billion to $1.2 billion to get it done. The same thing that makes remarketings and refinancings possible also makes it enormously possible to complete BATA's project financings over the next few months at a rate substantially, and I mean substantially below, what our modeling rate is right now. So, to get to the first of what we've done, this one has been completed. Basically, what we did here is we took $305 million worth of securities that were variable rate demand bonds, VRDOs, that had a weekly put with a line of credit or a credit facility behind them, standard variable rate demand bonds, standard weekly puts. And we actually converted them to five-year modes. Two pieces. One was done at a straight five-year mode, and we'll see the rate in that a second. And the other one was done at a floating rate, so it has a five-year term, but it'll be based on a floating rate for those 5 years. We took $305 million. Now, we had it was a good sale. It worked well. We picked $300 million because it was coming due, and we had banks. We had a couple of low credit ratings we wanted to get rid of. So anyway, what happens is we do not need credit support on the 305 anymore, so we reduce some of our exposure there. We don't have, there are issues coming up in the regulatory environment we will avoid on it. We have reduced what is called the put risk on the bonds, and that is an investor can put them in every week. Now they can put them in every 5 years. And the term out provisions or what the investor can do with the bonds is actually substantially more in our favor on these. With a weekly put, you can put them to the bank, and literally if they don't get remarketed, we have 5 years to take them out. In this case, if somebody at the end of 5 years they don't get remarketed, they don't get to do it. They have to keep them. So we've reduced some risk. We like the way it worked out, and so it gives us some plenty of options on the rest of the portfolio. We did $150 million at the fixed term rate, which is 1.45%. That is about equal to or just below the rate that we had on the variables before when you add liquidity facilities and remarketing and everything else. All those costs are now gone. It's roughly about the same. Sagamore is $155 million that is at the LIBOR rate. And as it's pegged to LIBOR, its current rate right now, and it will float, but its current rate is 1.085, and that is a little bit below what we paid before. I wouldn't be, you know, going to the bank saying these are great gains or losses. It simply demonstrates our ability to do things with this portfolio in the market at little or no cost, which is where we want to be, because if you can reduce risk and keep your costs the same, you're ahead. As we look forward, we still have some things to work on. The Sumitomo facility is $125 million, will come due in 13. We are opening negotiations with them already. We have liquidity facilities that will expire in 14, the bulk of our portfolio. They are expiring just in front of what is called Basel III, which is not a English movie or anything like that. Basel III simply is a new regulatory environment on how banks will control their balance sheets. Nobody knows how this is going to come out, and so banks are a bit leery to extend credit beyond that point. And, of course, if that happens, then the supply and demand world will creep into 14, and we'd like to stay ahead of that. So those are the components of where we are with that portfolio right now. We do think that the term mode change demonstrated that the market will accept very favorable terms, medium-length bonds, with no credit facilities, and again, at better terms. We like it. We think that as we move forward, particularly we have Bank of America, which has the lowest rating of the portfolio, P2. We have opportunities there in all kinds of forms, including these direct term bonds that we actually like. So we'll be keeping an eye on this, and we'll be working with it over the next, as long as the market lasts. So that's that piece. The second piece I'm going to talk about.
Right.
Yeah. Any questions? I'm sorry.
I just had one quick question. Again, it's more a reflection of, you know, not having taken finance in college, but you have a line here under, you know, which the point is that these bonds are highly desirable, and so there's a lot of demand for them in the market, which is great for us. So when I read this phrase, initial offering yields reduced significantly as a result of strong investor demand, basically what that means is our costs to borrow, our costs were lower. In other words, somebody else pays less. To us, yield means cost, essentially.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
I'm reticent to brag, but we went out into the market with $300 million and had $800 million or so worth of orders.
Okay.
We were able to go back in, reprice, drop what is going to be ultimately our yield on both tranches. There is remarkably, considering how low rates are, there is incredible investor demand for strong-rated credits.
Great.
And
okay.
We are, we'll demonstrate in just a minute, where we are against other strong-rated credits. And we think that's one of the reasons, while rates are down and there is this incredible demand, we want to be moving on the next sets of tranches.
Great. Thank you.
So Brian, what about 5 years? I mean, is that, would it be better to go on out further than...
We looked at it. We played with a couple of things in 7 and 10-year tranches. The market's just not ready for that in any size. but we just didn't see it being as profitable as the five-year tranche was.
When you mean that they didn't want to accept that kind of transaction, or the rates were so much higher?
From 5 to 10 years, the rate just it doesn't go up on a small curve; it goes up on a slope, and so it's just not the area that the investors were ready to do on what are supposedly short-term bonds. There wasn't a good market for it. We just backed off and stayed at 5 years.
Okay. Is there any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you. My hands are still shaking, so I haven't turned the page yet. Okay.
$300 million is nothing for you, Brian. Come on.
It's not the $300 million. I can deal with money. It's talking in front of people. It's hard. The second phase of what we're looking at has to do with interest rates. Now, as you look up the chart above you, it's got a bunch of squiggly lines and things. Let me walk you through it because it is the key to where we feel all the opportunities are right now. The first dark blue line you see up there, this one running down here, that dark blue line is the Revenue Bond Index, the RBI. And as Commissioner Wuhr said, where are we against good credits? Well, that's the measurement. The measurement is those are AA enterprise, the strongest of the strong. And the question is, on that given day, how did you do against the best of the best? And that's everybody's measurement. Everybody looks at it. You never look back. But on that day, you're always looking at it. Now, as you can see, the dots along here, in here, sorry, my hand is shaking so bad I can't hold anything. You can see the dots in here are where our actual financings are. Each one of those is the dots along the line. In some years, we obliterated the RBI index. In other years, we met it. We never actually had it cream us. But we were pretty overall given, and you can see up here, as you see the spike, this is 2008. This is the whole liquidity crisis right there. Our most expensive money is right there. And you can see we didn't get killed by the market up there, but we didn't get killed because we're here. We didn't get killed, but that's still, 2008 still constitutes our by far and away our most expensive money. We're going to talk about that in just a second. So we've been relatively successful in the market as measured against other strong AA credits. And we're pretty good with that. But what you see in this line, in this blue line here, is a repeatable pattern. Down, then up, down, then up, down, then up, then way down. The hard part in this, as you can see, this is right on where we were before. If we went to the other index called MMD, we'd actually be at the lowest point ever. So what we're looking at is the lowest marked level of municipal bond rates we have seen, not just as bad up, but probably we can't find anything. So as you look at that line, you can see, well, we're either at the bottom or we're just ready to spike up or this could continue, because you can see this rate has continued. Other than the spike here, you can see if you drop that area there, you can see a pretty much straight line down there. So there's your spike. The dip right in the middle is when the Build America bonds came in. And so we've had far more demand than we had supply. And in that case, it drove interest rates down. As soon as the Build Americas were gone, they spiked back up to normal. And then now we're seeing them driven down again by the economy. This creates an opportunity for us. The opportunity we have is to virtually begin a process, and it's a limited process, it's not unlimited, but to begin to pay down some of our most expensive debt. The 2008s are a clear candidate at plus 5%. The 2007s are another candidate. The immediate candidate will be the 2006s. Not our most expensive debt, but very protractive, very kind of plain vanilla refundings, and gives us an opportunity to test the market on a more immediate deal. So the key to it is the debt averages about 5%. Our portfolio earns somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 basis points, or 1/3%. The difference between that is pretty significant. So the idea is virtually to look at opportunities to begin to pay down the mortgage, because simply we're just not having the cash on hand is not the value it used to be.
Yeah. Question, Mark.
You call these candidates refunding candidates. When do they become? When do they move from just being a candidate to actually doing it?
Well, hopefully, if you give us two more pages, we'll show you exactly how they go from candidate to the actual doing. Okay. Now let me turn it over to Bob Rich.
Can I ask a question?
Sure,
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Evidently, we've been recently downgraded. Are you going to speak to that at some point?
That was a mistake.
That was a mistake.
Fitch made a mistake on one of our bonds.
Yeah, then you should address that, because I have an article that says, you know, we've been downgraded, and I'd like to know more about that.
Fitch made a mistake on one of our bonds, and they've already sent out a wire that corrected it, and I'll be happy to get it for you.
Okay. I don't know if you want to explain it publicly or not, because we should say that.
When we did the term bonds, there are various actions that happen because your rating is linked to both the rating of the bank and, of course, us. When we did the term bonds, some of those ratings fall away. And, of course, they send out to all the federal agencies and to us notices that those ratings have been withdrawn, which is perfectly normal. We expect it. Fitch took out a rating on a bond that wasn't involved. It wasn't involved in our refundings. They actually made a mistake, withdrew a rating on the wrong bond. Susan caught it, you know, Susan Wu. Susan caught it immediately, got back to Fitch. Fitch sent out, I think, a correction yesterday, and we will send you out the correction in the email. So we were not downgraded. In fact, again, we are the only transit agency, toll agency, through the whole recession that has not only not been downgraded, but has not been put on negative outlook and has actually been put on stable outlook. So we've actually been upgraded. And thank you for the question. Okay, now I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Rich. There's some more questions. And he will explain how this process will work.
So page 4 goes through the rationale and shows the steps that are going to be taken in order to make the candidates a reality, to make them refunded. As Brian noted, the rationale with interest rates as low as they are, those low interest rates affect earnings. And BATA's earnings, like everyone's around the country, are very low. The notable exception, as noted here, are BATA's bonds, which are outstanding at much higher rates than its money is invested. So you can look at using cash in order to help defease bonds as, in fact, an investment in those bonds. So an investment at much higher rates. And that's simply what we're doing here. We're looking to use cash in order to defease higher-rated bonds to result in an overall better return on that cash than its use presently. And you'll see how this all plays out in actual dollar benefits to BATA. So what happens below is $27 million, which is available from your debt service reserve as a result of some recalculations of the Build America bond interest that doesn't have to be reserved against, as well as available cash of $120 million is put into an escrow, which will basically is an interest-bearing escrow, which is going to earn, as noted here, 0.44%, already 10 basis points more than this cash is earning now. Those monies will go to pay interest on the 2006 F bonds that are outstanding until we're able to exercise the call option on those bonds in 2016. That's the dotted line to the far right. In addition to that, we will sell and price next week, close by October 23rd, $716 million of refunding bonds. Those bonds will also have associated with them, given their structure, what's called a premium, so additional cash. They as well, the proceeds of those as well, will be deposited in this interest-bearing escrow fund. so that at the call date, those proceeds in premium equal $842 million and allow us effectively to call in and defease the higher interest 2006 F bonds. So at that time, on the call date, those 2006 F bonds will be extinguished by this cash and bond proceeds. And what is the result of that? If you turn to page 5, you can see what the result of that is for BATA. So with the $147 million of cash put in and the bonds, if you look at the table below, we wind up adjusting the debt service now by putting in the new bonds, in the 2012 F1 bonds, in replacing the 2006 F1 bonds, which have now been defeased. And what that does, if you look in column D, because the new bonds are at a lower interest rate, interest rates are lower now than they were in 2006, that creates effectively $218 million of cash flow savings to BATA over this similar period of time. And cash flow is important for an entity like BATA because we measure coverage and other credit factors based upon annual cash flow. But because we're finance people, we have to use this measuring stick called present value. And present value it enables you to compare basically apples and oranges and bananas by discounting them back at a common factor. So if you look at the next column, this is the discount of those cash flows that are going to be received over time to a point today. So those cash flows over time are worth $164 million today. And that's important because that enables you then to measure your contribution, this cash contribution, and see what you're getting for the cash you're putting in. So the top right analysis shows that $164 million. It shows the present value of the cash that you're putting in, the present value of the $120 million at minus $76 million. And the $27 million at the $27 million number, and it shows that in transacting this, in putting the cash in this transaction, there's a $61 million present value to BATA, less than the $164 million of the cash flow discount, because you have to account for what BATA's investing in the refunding. But the bottom line number is a $61 million present value, current day benefit to BATA in exercising this transaction.
Okay, are there any questions?
Can you try it again?
Yeah. Amy?
You know, this is really helpful, and I, you know, again, seeing this for the first time, can you offer this explanation in even simpler terms, just in terms of giving us a broad view of exactly, you know, kind of, it sounds like we have cash on hand, we can put that into essentially reduce, even though the bonds, what I'm hearing is that the bonds stay in place, of course, because you don't want to pay the penalties and that sort of thing. You said what we're doing is we're taking available cash that we have right now and moving it into an interest earning, so those two kind of essentially offset.
They all come together.
Okay,
yeah.
And the value to us is $61 million.
Yeah, I think you could think about it, let's say if you're refinancing a 5% mortgage and you have some money in a money market fund that's earning 0.1 or something like that, and you say, why, you know, I could help bring down my 5% mortgage with both the cash I have as well as the current market, which may be at 4%. The combination actually helps me greater and makes the money I had in the Cal Mutual Fund actually work a little better and for your cash flow, which is bad as cash flow, it's the same result. You're spending less.
Okay.
Any questions on that?
I think, are there any other questions?
As we walk from this page, I mean, this is essentially, back that up just a second, Susan. You're looking at, this is our current mortgage. This the combination of everything, this is the key. This is the cash flow right here. The cash flow is what makes everything work, that final column, because that's what we do. We're an enterprise. Our debt coverages come from cash flow. Our ability to borrow comes from cash flow. Your ability to build projects comes from cash flow. It does not actually come from net present value. However, for what we do in this business, we do have to show it, and it is a part of what we do. Now go to the next one, Susan. Thank you. But as you go through, obviously financing is more than the present value gain. Now, $61 million net present value after your contribution, don't get me wrong, that's a very good calculation. But if you look down, and if you look at the chart, you can see where it summarizes relatively in here. You can see this is the existing before, and you can see what our ending balances are. You can see what the coverage are on our senior lien bonds. And after, you can see you're going to have an average of about $12 million more a year in cash flow. And you're going to have an average that will increase your coverage substantially as you go through and as the bonds kick in. This is the kind of thing you want to see. This is now gives you more abilities. It improves your coverage. It makes you a stronger credit. It's very important that we show the present value of these things, but it's also very important to see that when you're done with the whole calculation, that you're actually strengthening the overall credit and your overall flexibility in what we're doing. It'll give us more capacity. It gives us more coverage, more abilities. The thing about the whole structure here, the important thing, is you're not going to take anything out of the bank that you weren't going to pay to debt service anyway. You can pay the same $250, $300 million in debt service, not refund anything, and you'll pay them. Or we refund, and you'll still keep. We're just going to prepay one. You get it back with your cash flow. It's designed that way. This is a very key component to what we're doing. That's key. We're not taking anything away from your projects or anything else. We are simply prepaying something now so that we get the benefit of it in a few years.
What is the potential downside?
On this transaction, I suspect that the biggest downside would be that we can't get to the market or we can't sell the bonds. And therefore, you lose the opportunity. As far as downside on the bonds, the other component could be you will be prepaying your debt service. You'll be coming out of pocket money to this year instead of over the next 3 years. And if for whatever something happened, and structurally, for example, the bridges, we had problems, we had a major earthquake, we had the catastrophe, tolls don't roll in the same way, we would be facing some issues. However, we are prepared for those issues as well. We designed the enterprise to be able to withstand that kind of an event for roughly a year. So I think that your downside really here is if we lose the market and we miss it.
Yes. Mark Green?
I'm just looking at the the differences between 2014 and 15 on that chart, and then look at the other years, and I'm curious as to why the difference on the before refunding and after refunding in going from 14 to 15 is somewhat... not much, but somewhat less than the pace that you're seeing either before or after that as an average. Was there something peculiar going on in that year that you're predicting or what?
Well, up to 16, you're actually kind of covering 1.5 debt services, which is why it's a little slower in the beginning and then speeds up as you go along. Then you get the full value after 16 because the bonds have been retired. And then it will depend upon different maturities that are already scheduled in those years as to what the values come.
Yeah, I think there are some benefits with respect to the principal amount that show up after the call date, so 2017 and beyond, because you're deploying cash and a lower amount of bonds as a result. Your principal is actually going down. So 2017 starts to reflect more of that. The old bonds are gone. So that's why you see a pretty significant pickup after the old bonds are gone.
So as we leave this page, the key here is it's cash flow. The refinancing produces an incredible cash flow gain, and that is where you want to be. As we turn over, as Commissioner Green asked, when do you go from candidate to the real deal? The 06s are real. We are working on that. We are, in fact, after this meeting, we'll prepare the investor roadshows and do some other things and try to sell the bonds as quickly as we can because the market is extremely good. The other two financings that we have, 07 and 08, are taking a bit more of a design, and it's taking us a little longer to work on them. It'll take more investor participation, more rating agency participation, mainly because they're farther out. As you look at them, and look at the two, if we used the same structure and the same market held today, you would be talking about present value gains of $130 million plus or minus. Now, we can't guarantee the market will hold till we get these done, but that's what it would be if we could do them today. That's a tremendous incentive to move and get these things done. The good point of the whole thing is we can achieve this, but we don't want to lose sight of it. We will strengthen in doing this, bad as overall credit. We will not reduce or delay any of your projects. And we will not be reducing our liquidity levels in any way that will not be recovered through the cash flows. So in essence, we have found a way to take advantage of what is the lowest interest rate market very quickly, hopefully efficiently, and ultimately, it's a reflection, again, of an overall strengthening of BATA's enterprise, which is already at double A. That is it for the do's and don'ts and what we're going to do. The next page is the schedule. On this transaction, we'll be moving very quickly. As I said, we start the investor roadshows. We'll be taping something today. We move off to New York, Boston and New York next week. And then hopefully Bob and his team can watch as our senior managing underwriters get this thing out in the market and hopefully sell bonds to investors. Now, the last page, and I am not going to go over it, is just a reminder that there are a lot of rules and regulations we have to follow. You've approved them, and they are still in effect. So we follow them. We're not changing them. The present value of the refunding still has to be proven and calculated. How much these guys get paid is still limited. And what we can do with the refundings is still within your those components. So, Susan, back up the schedule. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have, try to fill in some of the gaps. I know it's fast. The good thing is that the 2006 refunding is actually the most plain vanilla of them. But it is a bit of a case of mathematics. It takes a bit of work to get there. But by far and away, this is the largest gain I have seen on a refunding in my career. So we're pretty anxious to get at it. As I said, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Brian, just in terms of the purchase of the building and the money to purchase the building, how does that impact, if at all, in this cash flow question?
It won't. The purchase of the building was done with money that is in our rehab fund. It was meant to be a rehab project. Our rehab fund is fully funded for the next 2 or 3 years, so it doesn't have any impact on that.
Okay, so we have current dollars available to recover all of our potential costs.
Yeah, all projects that we have on the books right now that are active are fully funded, except for the seismic projects that we'll need. The balance of those, we still have bonds to issue on those.
Okay. Mark, Green?
I see that you're starting in November the evaluation of the 07 and 08 series, and any prediction as to when do you think you would get to the post-price close sequence for those bonds? And the reason I say that is because the way you lay it out is certainly worthwhile to going ahead with this, and I'm just thinking that if you need to get outside temporary help, so to speak, on this, it would probably be worth the commission's level or to actually provide you with that.
Well, that's a good question, sir. No, we don't need outside help. What we need to do is finish the financials. We're getting to a point now where we are just on the cusp. And we can get this done, because it's relatively simple and the investors understand it, relatively quickly, but we're getting it done in front of the release of our financials. Once we crack October, you can't do that. At least we've never been able to do it. And so now you're going to have to wait for the financials to be done, and then it will take, then you've got updated financials, updated investors, updated rating agencies. So really, the soonest we'll be cracking this thing will be late October, early November. Believe me, the people sitting behind me and the person sitting here, they want to do it much faster, but I can't, you know, getting financials out in 90 days is a killer. And that's what we're targeting. So that has to be our focus. We just can't move faster than that. It takes that long to get them out.
Yeah. I think a lot of this schedule really reflects Brian and Sue's availability. The finance team has been doing the analysis all along. And it's really, you know, without sacrificing Brian, we're ready to go as soon as he is, but the audit is a critical component to get in place.
He didn't quite mean that as badly as it sounds.
Unless the board wants us to sacrifice him, then we can.
Well, that's not a bad idea. So, question, yes. Work?
Go ahead. I just have another follow-up question. And Brian, you mentioned the values to doing this are both that it provides additional resources. It strengthens the credit worthiness of our excellent portfolio. And you also mentioned that the costs are what we have embedded in our policies, the costs we pay. But does the savings include essentially a deduction for any kind of costs this will include in terms of the transactions?
The savings actually is net of all costs and okay. Even the foregone interest on the portfolio.
Okay.
That's all calculated in there.
Great.
And it is a timely move for us as an enterprise because we are coming up on the last parts of our seismic financing. And as we strengthen the enterprise, we actually think, and I'm glad you brought that up, Commissioner Irity, that the Fitch had made its mistake and everybody saw it. Because we're actually going to make a move to go exactly the other way. We will actually approach the rating agencies with an upgrade because as we get to the end of the enterprise, what would an upgrade do to us if we're done financing?
Yeah.
So now we're going to sort of take this one head on.
Well, great. Thank you. Thank you for this report. And again, forgive me my questions as I work to understand all this. But I just wanted to offer a comment, and I support what you're suggesting. And I just think this is a reflection of the wisdom of setting up BATA as an independent organization that is able to make finance decisions, because this credit rating and our ability to borrow dollars for the projects that we're doing for the seismic safety of the region is impacted by our ability to do that well. And I think that the management of these funds has been really superb. And it shows how the market responds to that in valuing us as an entity. So.
You know, Commissioner Worth, I know you're not looking for an answer to that, but I'm going to give you a brief one for a second because
okay.
Commissioner Haggerty has actually and Dodd both have been back at the rating agencies and both have seen the value of your ability to make decisions and make commitments for the board on an independent and standalone basis, and that is, quite frankly, the reason we are rated where we are.
Thank you.
Okay. Brian, thank you very much. I guess we're not the only ones trying to rush to market, right?
No, we're not alone.
We're just
trying to beat a super state.
So do you think, if everybody's trying to refinance, I mean, aren't rates going to go up pretty soon? Or?
I've been saying yes to that since 2007.
Okay, thank you very much for the report. So unless there are any other questions, we'll move on to the next item. Thank you. So the next item is going to be rehab program update. And Peter is going to present that to us. Peter Lee.
Good morning, Commissioners. Peter Lee with BATA staff. Item, item four. Excuse me, once I get it up and running. Item 4A is just a real quick update to the Tollbridge Rehabilitation Program that the authority adopts on an annual basis. We adopt a 10-year plan. Before you today is BATA Resolution 104 revised, which just makes a number of minor revisions to the plan adopted back in June. But what I've been asked to do is provide a brief update of what the rehab program is, what we do with it, and talk about potential long-term needs of the bridges into the future. The Toll Bridge Rehabilitation Program encumbers a number of projects on the bridges, as well as the toll collection facilities that we have responsibilities for. There are structural projects, roadway resurfacing, painting, a number of projects that you anticipate for the ongoing maintenance and safe operation of the bridges. Caltrans does go through an extensive bridge needs effort to review the project, the bridges, determine where we need to make repairs for the bridges for wear and tear, cold improvements, and the like. I'm just going through real quickly and for time, but we adopt, as part of the budget resolution on an annual basis, the 10-year cycle for the rehabilitation program. And this chart here shows the cumulative need in blue and the long-term cumulative funding that we provided to Caltrans over the last, since inception of BATA in 1998. Prior to 2012, we were providing approximately $40 million a year for toll bridge rehabilitation. We have since increased that with additional financing and flexibility that Brian's provided to us. And over the next 10 years, we will be able to fund our toll bridge rehabilitation needs that have been determined by the department. Beyond that point, though, we get out to a point about 15-20 year time frame. There turns to be more wear and tear on the bridges, as well as deck replacements that are some fairly large projects out into the future. And this rehabilitation program primarily focuses on maintaining preventative maintenance on the bridge, but doesn't really look at, say, the long-term, perhaps, replacement of the bridges. And this chart here just identifies where we currently stand with the ages of the bridges today. And you can see the Bay Bridge celebrated its 75th year anniversary. The Richmond Bridge, the old Carquinez, and the old Benicia are all approaching 50-plus years old. And if you make a comparison to when we've replaced some of the other bridges in the past, the Dumbarton Bridge, the Antioch Bridge, the old Carquinez, they all were replaced between 50 and 25 years out of service life. So it's perhaps something we need to explore into the future. It's noted in the memorandum that we're going to be working with the department over the next few months to look more into the long-term needs of the bridges and perhaps spend some of the money that Brian's identified with his financing and turn that back into the bridges. We plan to come back in December with a more long-term plan that goes out maybe perhaps 20 years. But for this particular ask today, let me get back to that, we're requesting a committee referral of BATA Resolution 104 revised to the authority to make the minor changes in rehab. I'm sorry if it was really brief, but I can certainly answer any questions staff may have.
Okay, are there any questions for Peter? Mark?
I know that I've read this, I guess, a day or so ago, that the San Mateo Bridge is going to be shut down in October with dates to be determined. Has that happened to be determined? When those dates actually are?
Yeah, I was going to cover that in the next item 5, but the San Mateo Hayward Bridge is currently scheduled to be fully closed over the weekends of October 19th and October 26th to do replacement of the several spans of the bridges. I'll have a picture next item 5.
And it's still safe for me to drive over those in the meantime, right?
It is safe. We did make the repair. I'll cover it at that point in time. So that's item 4A.
Okay, we need a motion to approve the
approval.
I have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
Okay. Is there an objection to all be voted aye? Okay. Seeing none, we'll all be voted aye then. Pass unanimously. Thank you, Peter. Next item.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Stephen Baker with BATA staff. This morning before you, I'm bringing a contract for approval. This item would authorize the executive director or his designee to award a contract to Proven Management, Inc. for construction services for the San Francisco Bay Bridge Toll Plaza renovation project in the amount not to exceed $5,174,560. The item would also authorize us to use contingency funds in the amount of $700,776,184 to be used by BATA's sole discretion for changes in the work. A little bit on the background of the project. The project would upgrade the San Francisco Bay Bridge Toll Plaza by recladding the canopy structure, replacing crash cushions, repainting the booths, the columns, and also they're not shown in this picture or this slide, is a pump station that serves Caltrans in helping with the drainage. That building would be replaced and recladded also. On July 6, 2012, BATA issued an invitation for bid for the project. On August 28th, BATA received and opened four bids. The low bid for the project was presented by Proven Management for a total bid amount of $6,469,560. I won't go through the whole agenda item in the essence of time and to move through, so I'm going to move forward with the recommendation. Staff recommends that the committee authorizes the executive director or his designee to award the contract for the construction of the San Francisco Bay Bridge Toll Plaza renovation project to Proven Management, Inc. in the amount of $5,174,560, pending staff's review of Proven's responsibility and responsiveness. This committee would give the executive director or his designee authority to use contingency funds in the amount of $776,184. Staff is available for any questions at this point. I won't go through, again, as I said, I won't go through the whole agenda item.
Okay. Well, so I don't understand. Could you briefly explain what time costs are? You have a call, bid item costs and time costs?
This procurement item has both a item cost and a time cost. A plus B, or cost plus procurement time bidding method, the time cost is the cost for the contractor to do the project. He bids a certain amount of days, okay, and what it does is we're looking to make a more efficient and shorter project.
Okay, so the original, because you see the original cost, bid costs were lower by one of the...
Commissioner Bates?
Party. Yeah.
Andrew Vermeer, Deputy Executive Director. The type of analysis that's done on an A plus B contract uses time only to compare the value of time. So the low bid is the addition of the bid cost plus the number of days that the contractor bid. But what it means is somebody could actually be the low bidder by saving time overall. So you're paying a premium potentially to finish the job earlier. And the contractor's on the hook to finish it earlier from what is in the engineer's estimate for time. Okay. So Proven Management basically got a credit for delivering the project 100 days earlier as a commitment.
Okay, and what happens if they don't do it?
Well, what it does is it changes the contract duration officially. So they now are subject to liquidated damages at the time, the adjusted time of their shorter commitment. Obviously, if we have owner-caused delays, that would still impact the delivery of that commitment, but it would be based on their duration of time, which is 100 days less than the other bidders.
So they can't game the system, though. They can't say, "We'll do this a lot faster," and then we have all these problems that came up, these things we didn't anticipate.
The industry is very good at working hard to try to find additional work. We work very hard at trying to avoid that. There's
so
no change in advantage by the bid process. Yeah.
So they can't just say, "Well, you guys did all these change orders, so you can't hold us to
correct
this thing."
Okay. It's an interesting process. If the B value is what it's called, the value of a day is very high, then I think you increase that gamesmanship because they really start to accelerate the work. We're not doing it in this case for an acceleration process or a concept. We're just trying to make sure that we're being efficient with the way that the contractors choose to bid it. Some people can do things in different stages and take advantage of that in the bid process with time.
Okay, thank you. I've not seen this before as an item. Okay. Is there a motion on this? Yes.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on that. I'm wondering how realistic it is from your estimation that this will be completed in the number of days that is estimated, if it's 100 days fewer than some of the other bidders. Is there something out of whack about that projection?
That's going to be part of the due diligence process. I mean, we, in a lot of respects, don't have a lot of control over that. He is committed to it. He's contractually committed to it. We will review his staging to some degree, but there's not a lot of control in the award process for determining it. Obviously, if we thought it was very unrealistic, we could take the risk of not recommending award, in which case we'd probably rebid. But we don't see that being the case.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Looking for a motion here, then? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second? Second. Okay. Is there an objection to us being voted aye? Okay. Seeing none, we'll be voted aye. Voting unanimously. Pass unanimously. Thank you. Next item, please.
Yeah. Item 4C, Commissioners, Peter Lee with Bata Staff, is a request for a contract amendment. Authorization for a contract amendment with TY Lynn International to complete the preparation of the project initiation document for the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge West Bend Bike Pedestrian Maintenance Pathway Project. This project was started, the project initiation document was started back in late 2009 and is nearing completion. We need additional funds, however, because we were asked to do additional studies, technical studies on the bridges that were out of scope initially, as well as there has been some guidance changes on the preparation of PIDs that has cost some additional funds. The request is for $300,000. We hope to be a little bit less than that. And this is, staff recommends that the committee authorize the executive director as designee to negotiate and enter into that contract amendment.
Okay. Thank you. So, David?
Thank you. I was wondering if you can explain a little bit about sort of what was unexpected about the need to increase the scope.
The PID was based on the 2001 feasibility study of putting bike paths on the existing span. We were attempting to primarily focus on either ends of the bridges and not so focus on the main span itself. But there were a number of questions that came up in terms of future work that may have to happen on the bridge, in terms of deck replacement perhaps. Of the bridge, which would give us opportunities to build both projects at the same time if we were going to build it. There would be some synergies there. So we did a lot more in-depth review of the deck replacement to determine what the life of the bridge deck was, working with Caltrans to make that determination, and it just costs additional time.
It is. Thank you. And is there any chance that the $300,000 could actually be increased, that the could be a further request to increase that?
We hope to have this done by the end of the year. I don't anticipate any additional costs.
Thank you.
Beyond this.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Commissioner McKenzie.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the visual that we're being shown. It gives us the appearance where the bicyclists and everybody are going off a cliff, but no doubt this is to emphasize the need for this project.
It's a cross-section of the community as well as the bridge.
Well,
it is actually a pretty complicated project because it's going to be evidently, you can't just do it on one side of the bridge. You have to do it on both sides of the bridge in order to balance the weight.
And, we would recommend
you've
that, yes.
You've got a major problem. When you get to San Francisco, how are you going to get to the touchdown?
Yes, there are a number of challenges.
A lot of challenge, but it's worth it. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. Okay, thank you, Peter. You need a motion? Please have a motion to accept this? Okay, second. So is there an objection to us all voting aye? Seeing none, we'll all vote aye, and that passed unanimously.
I have the final item is just a monthly progress report. I will be very brief. On the self-anchored suspension span, we are in the process of load transfer where we're lifting the roadway deck up onto the main cable. You'll see that some of the cables now, suspender cables, are now flayed out at an angle now, being attached to the roadway deck. These are some of the workers working on tightening some of the cable bands. You can see basically we pull the suspender cables to the roadway deck with various chains, and then we use hydraulic jacks to put them in the right position. These are the things in yellow are the jacks themselves. They get incrementally pulled down, and then we lock them down, and we just continue that process. This is basically the cable nearing its final position on one set right here, and then these little blocks will be slid into place and locked down. So we're currently in that process of load transfer, and we hope to have that completed in the next around a month or two. And then we are still on schedule for Labor Day 2013 opening of the bridge. One note on the Dumbarton Bridge, we did have a Labor Day closure. We didn't have any real major impacts to traffic, and the work went on smoothly, and we opened the bridge early And finally, on the San Mateo-Hayward Bridge closure, once again, we are going to do a rehabilitation project on the bridge. You see these lines that go across the bridge. This is one individual span. There are piles underneath each location, and it's about 35 feet. We'll be replacing two spans in each direction, basically to provide a new expansion joint for the bridge. If you recall, back in late 2010, Caltrans inspection went out and found a crack in one of the details to the expansion joint there. It was repaired with by sandwiching some steel plates around the crack, but this is the permanent fix. I believe the department's going to go out with a media outreach in the next week or so, as well as turning on all the changeable message signs to notify the public that we will be closing San Mateo Hayward Bridge. Unfortunately, with the Dumbarton Bridge closure during Labor Day, we didn't want to mix the messages, so it's kind of coming up quick. But it will happen, and we will get out to the local communities with the closure and as well as the notification. The detours will be the Bay Bridge to the north, as well as the Dumbarton Bridge to the south, and we are making preparations to get as many toll booths open so we can handle any of the traffic impacts.
Okay, Peter, thank you for the update. This, unless there's a question for Peter, that concludes the business of ATA for today. So the committee will adjourn, and I guess we'll be meeting, next month, okay? So now we're